AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. We are taking a look at a few different legislative items this morning that are designed to hopefully bring some sensibility back to food labeling and a new effort to clean up shipping delays. And it was 1 year ago today that lives changed for many along a 700-mile path through the middle of the country.
Live from Tenassa Tuesday via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with a conversation with Hollis Bennett. Then it's on to U.S. Senator Mike Rounds. Later, Representative Dusty Johnson checks back in. And right after the news, Karen Bonertz from Farm Journal's Milk. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Lorre.
All right, Davis. Yeah, let's look back 1 year. And I tell you, it gives me a little bit of the willy jillies because we've got the potential for some severe weather again in the Midwest later this afternoon and evening. But it was 1 year ago today that the derecho pushed right through the middle of Iowa, right down the I-30 corridor. And, boy, we're still recovering, Davis. We're still recovering from that.
We all got to learn a brand new climatological term, derecho. I mean, you know, 2020 gave us all sorts of stuff that we didn't even know that we needed to be concerned about, you know? just kept on giving.
That's right. Yeah. It wasn't the first derecho that we had ever experienced in Iowa. I mean, I think it was 2011. We had one in the middle of the middle of the state, did some damage, but this was by far so much bigger and so much stronger than anything that we had experienced, that it was like it was a brand new event, something that had never happened before. But it was just wow.
Once those pictures started rolling in, the magnitude of what, you know, initially was like, oh yeah, I heard it got pretty windy.
Oh, storm. Yeah.
Right. Pretty quickly turned to, wow, this is expensive, this is costly, this in some cases was absolutely heartbreaking.
Yep, that's right. Hollis Bennett is a documentary filmmaker. He made a short doc about the recovery, and we're going to talk with Hollis about Against the Wind coming up here in just a little bit. The other thing that happened 1 year ago today was the rally started. The rally started in the grains.
1 year ago today.
Yes.
As I recall, you called it, didn't you? You were like,
feels
like the rally might be starting. I think you did. I'll have to check.
You think so? We'll have to go back and check the tape.
Pretty
Get
sure
to the news.
It.
What do you got?
Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen on Monday urged Congress to pass a bipartisan resolution to raise the amount of money the U.S. government can borrow, saying failing to increase the debt ceiling so would, quote, cause irreparable harm to the economy. Republican lawmakers led by Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell have threatened to refuse to vote for raising the debt ceiling. Chip, U.S. job openings rose in June by more than forecast to a fresh record high, highlighting businesses' persistent struggles to hire enough workers to keep up with rebounding economic activity. The number of available positions rose to 10.1 million during the month from an upwardly revised 9.5 million in May, Labor Department survey showed yesterday. Chip, that's the highest level since record keeping began in the year 2000. Overall, nearly 80% of U.S. workers now earn at least $15 an hour. That's up from 60% in 2014. Job sites and recruiting firms say many job seekers will not even consider jobs that pay less than $15 an hour anymore.
Yeah. The workforce is feeling, well, those that are on the edge of the workforce and may be coming back to work are feeling pretty empowered out there right now and demanding more than what they've ever demanded to come back into a job.
Well, the Senate today is expected to clear the $550 billion physical infrastructure measure. The vote is expected around 11 a.m. Eastern Time. All told, some 70 senators appear poised to carry the bipartisan package to passage. Senator Kevin Cramer, who has supported the bipartisan bill while opposing the Democrats' reconciliation measure, is okay giving the president a win, believing GOP lawmakers will benefit from delivering to their voters long-needed improvements and projects.
Yeah, it's clearly going to be a topic in the elections in 2022, no doubt.
Well, a bipartisan group of senators are urging USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack to deliver not only aid to contract hog growers that was authorized in December, but also top-up payments to hog producers that were announced in January under the Coronavirus Food Assistance Program. That's your CFAP. Chip, in other news, Secretary of State Anthony Blinken Monday left no doubt that inking new trade deals is not an immediate focus for the Biden administration. In remarks in Maryland on U.S. infrastructure and technology, Blinken noted the U.S. pursued new trade deals as the U.S., quote, thought we could trade more with the world while investing less here at home. He said that did not work out for our economy, for our workers, or for our communities. And finally, U.S. lawmakers and Biden administration officials are stepping up pressure on American businesses to stop imports from the Western Chinese region of Xinjiang as Beijing's alleged use of forced labor emerges as a top item on their bilateral trade agenda. Western officials say the Chinese government uses forced labor of Uyghur and other Muslim minorities in Xinjiang. That's the world's leading producer of cotton and raw materials used in solar panels. Beijing strongly denies the claim. Chip.
All right, Davis. Thank you so much. Let's bring in Karen Bonert. She is the editor of Farm Journal's Milk. How are you, Karen?
I'm great. Happy Tuesday, Chip.
Hey, thank you. Thank you so much. The World Dairy Expo, it's about 2 months away, and it's going to happen, isn't it?
It's going to happen, and everybody's super, super excited. I'm sure it'll have a different feel than it did 2 years ago, but the good news is that we have a big dairy event to gather at, and the dairy world is excited to do just that. But there's going to be some new things, Chip, including a sunset celebration as we celebrate the return of World Dairy Expo with a free concert on Friday, October 1st evening. Dylan Carmichael, a national country music artist, will serve as a headline performer. So that's something people want to mark their calendars for. Also, a pretty neat thing is they're doing Career Connection. It introduces businesses and farms to students and young professionals searching for a position in the dairy industry. They got a free registration, so they have to register to participate. The companies, farms, and students, it's required. So go to worlddairyexpo.com. But, man, this is needed. People are looking for jobs, and I'm sure that there's vacancies out there to put people in.
Oh, yeah.
One more thing is education has always been the central focus of Expo. And this year, educational opportunities are expanding into Expo Español, which includes seminars presented in Spanish for dairy owners, managers, and mid-managers. Cool. So there's lots of new things. Of course, a lot of the same will still be there. There'll be an exhibit hall full of exhibitors willing to talk to dairy producers to tell them about their latest and greatest. And our very own Tyne Morgan, the U.S. Farm Report, will go live on Thursday, September 30th from 8 to 9. So there's a lot to go on, people. Mark your calendars and make your way to Madison. So we're excited.
Very cool. Karen, thank you so much. That's Karen Bonert, editor of Farm Journal's Milk. We'll be back with more AgriTalk in a moment.
Find farm equipment on Machine Repeats August 17 online auction. No reserve, no buyer fees. Start bidding now. Auctions.machinerypeat.com.
Farm Journal and the National FFA Foundation present the second annual Farm On Benefit Concert. Featuring country music star Easton Corbin, the concert will air on Monday, September 20 at 7 Central on RFD TV. And your FFAer can be part of it. Just text a picture of them in their blue jacket with the words Farm On to 31313 or use the Farm On hashtag on social media. Join us for the hashtag Farm On Benefit Concert, September 20 at 7 p.m. on RFD TV.
Farm Journal and the National FFA Foundation present the second annual Farm On Benefit Concert featuring country music star Easton Corbin on September 20th at 7 Central on RFD TV.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me. Hey, yes. That billboard that ran at the end of the last segment talking about the online auction at machinerypete.com. If you want to learn more about that, listen to yesterday's segment that we did with Greg Peterson from Machinery Pete. Just go to agritalk.com. You can listen to it there. Get it off the AgriTalk app. You can obviously listen to it there. But Greg did a great job of explaining exactly what's going on here. But here it is. I mean, it's no reserves. It's no buyer's fees. 116 farm equipment items on the auction right now. Bidding is open right now. Just go to machinerypete.com. And at the top, the very top of the page is a yellow bar. Click on that yellow bar, and it will take you straight to the auction. So really easy to get to, Davis.
You're saying really machinerypete.com.
Machinerypete.com, yellow bar, top of the
yellow
page.
Yellow bar. Yes. Yellow bar. I spent a All week right. at the yellow bar one night. Hey-o.
Excellent. Okay. Against the wind. Against the wind. It is the title of a short documentary about the derecho that dumped its energy into the Midwest just 1 year ago today. Iowa took the most direct punch from the storm. The deepest scars we were talking about earlier was left right along that Highway 30 corridor. And it's like we were saying, Davis, it was an historic event, an event that communities are still recovering from. The people that were in the path are still recovering from it. I've got a lot of family that were in the middle of that storm. And the recovery of the people hit by the storm is what documentary filmmaker Hollis Bennett focused on when he made Against the Wind. Hollis, welcome to AgriTalk. How are you?
Hey. Good, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. So, the motivation to do this documentary, this short doc, Hollis, where did that come from?
Well, it came out of a couple of different avenues. You know, like everybody else, we were, my industry, we were pretty sidelined with the pandemic. And I was talking to some of my colleagues and, you know, all lamenting work drying up and just kind of needing to get outside and get back to work and get back to creating. And, you know, I've always had a passion for telling stories, especially kind of in the middle of the country that doesn't get as much attention. And, you know, through kind of a few different events, we were able to connect with our farmer and, you know, of course, knew about the derecho, and it just kind of spun from there.
Yeah. So how did you connect with the family that you featured?
Yeah, so I worked with a production company here in Nashville where I'm based, uh-huh. and we kind of both tapped our, you know, our networks, and, you know, we all do work, you know, out of state and all over the place. And, you know, we sent some feelers out there, and I'm trying to think exactly of the connection, but it was somebody we'd worked with in the past who had gone to college with our farmer's wife, I believe was the connection. We got him on the phone, kind of explained, you know, just what we were looking to do, and kind of, you know, hey, we heard the story, you know, we know you suffered some serious loss. I want to see if you want to talk about it. And fortunately for us, he was definitely all about talking about it.
Good. And boy, he was right along Highway 30, I believe, Hollis, near Keystone, right?
Yeah, just south of Keystone there in Benton County. And yeah, I mean, they
right in the locked. Middle of it.
Big time.
Yeah, big time. So what did you learn, Hollis, from doing this? What did you learn?
Well, a lot of things. I don't know if we have enough time to go into all of them, but it was, you know, I think at the end of it, you know, when you know, the challenge as a filmmaker or a photographer, you know, working in this is that you have a limited amount of time to kind of get somebody's life story out, right? And it's almost an impossible ask, but we try. And working with Josh and his family, going there, boots on the ground, seeing firsthand, you know, what happened and hearing it in his own words, you know, what it meant, right? You know, like what he was going to do next. And what I really learned was, you know, something I already kind of knew, I guess, is this indomitable spirit, you know, this pick yourself back up, you know, you're self-made, you know, you just got to get back to work, you know, you put your head down and just get back to it. And it was, you know, it was a sad story initially, but it has this beautiful resolution, if you will. You know, hope springs eternal, right?
Yep.
The corn's in the ground right now. You know, I spoke with them the other day. You know, it's they could use a little bit more rain. We got plenty of sun. Weather's, you know, cooperating somewhat, but it's nothing like last year.
Right, right. You know, and you, I thought when you said that there was this nice resolution to everything that you were going to talk about the end of the film, Hollis, where guys were standing around in the shop, looked like they were drinking one of Iowa's favorite beverages, and they were starting to reconnect and get past the storm and get back to work. And I thought it was a really cool way to wrap up the story.
Yeah, and it's interesting too, because, you know, we needed, from the actual nuts and bolts of filmmaking, we needed to have an end, right? You have to have a start, a middle, and an end. Yep. Otherwise, nobody's going to watch it. And at the same time, I had to keep in the back of my mind, you know, I want to go back. I want to truly tell the full resolution of this story. And to that end, we're actually going back.
Good.
His grain bins are going up right now. I think they've got four big ones. I don't know the size, but, you know, it's an ordeal. And the last one should be going up next week. We're going to go film that. We're going to talk to Josh, talk to his family.
Cool.
You know, see the crops actually standing, and have a true kind of put a bow on it, so to speak. But nice. Back on the ground in November when we were in Iowa, you know, shooting this, we needed a way, you know, to kind of finish that piece, but also kind of leave us a door to walk through to tell the second half.
Yeah. Yeah. Very cool. Very cool. What was your favorite moment? And it doesn't necessarily have to be in the film, but what was your favorite moment when you were doing this?
Man, I think, you know, we talk so much about the what ifs and, you know, shooting a project and getting, you know, getting somewhere and actually, you know, making it happen. And when I finally, you know, was on the ground, that cold Iowa wind hit me in the face and knowing, okay, we're here, we have a job to do. I've got all the assets we need. I've got my guys, got my gear, got a subject. At that point, you know, that's typically whenever, anytime I shoot a project, that's my favorite moment because, you know, you have the next 2-3 days ahead of you, plus all the editing, but you have this, you know, the sense of promise, right? You got everything you need to tell the story, and now it's up to you, right? Ball's in your court. Time to go make something.
Yeah, cool, cool. So what did you leave out? You spoke of the editing. What did you leave out that you wish you didn't have to?
You know, we were pretty happy with the edit because, you know, there wasn't anything major that we had to leave out. And the beauty of that is because, you know, this is a self-funded, independent film. We didn't have any real constraints. You know, we weren't going to broadcast. We didn't have Netflix breathing down our neck, any of these kind of things. So we could let it be as big as we wanted or as limited. And we, you know, we worked, me and my team at Five Stone, which is the production company that helped me with this. You know, we worked with our editors and we had original music scored for this. And it really helped kind of tie everything together. And we also used a good bit of archival news footage. That in and of itself was a challenge. Because, right, we're talking about an event that happened in the past. Well, we can't go into the past and shoot it. You know, we weren't there. So we have to have a way to show the viewer what we're talking about, right?
Right.
And so we talked to the news channels, and some were, you know, some were very forthcoming. You know, the big national chains, maybe not so much. And so we had to work through that. So there was definitely some, I guess, more friction or some more challenges there where we found pieces of footage that we really wanted to use that were just perfect, but we just couldn't get the permission that we needed at the end of the day. So, you know, be it as may, that's really not a big deal. You know, I mean, I think that's probably the biggest, you know, regret I have.
Cool.
But it's a pretty minor one.
Yeah. Hollis, how can people watch it?
Yeah. So it's on my website. It's just hollisbennett.com. HollisBennett. And go on the left side. There's a motion gallery and it should be the first piece that comes up.
Very cool. And when they do go to HollisBennett.com to watch Against the Wind, what do you hope they take away from that?
I hope they educate themselves, you know, understand what this event was. You know, it was, in the scheme of weather, it was very localized. You know, it was a relatively small area. But inside that small area, there were, you know, dozens and hundreds of farmers that were affected. And, you know, the story with Josh, you know, we told his story, obviously. But people need to understand that his story is representative of so many other people. Yeah. And so many other people lost more. You know, everybody had a challenge. And it's just, yeah, just understand that it's
very cool.
Bigger than just one person.
Yes, yes, very cool. Hollis, thank you so much for the time helping us remember what happened 1 year ago today with the derecho in Iowa. Hollis Bennett, documentary filmmaker. Go to hollisbennett.com. and watch Against the Wind. We've got Senator Mike Rounds up next.
From August 23rd through the 27th, your Farm Journal Field Days in-person experience will take you on the road to live events at America's top farms. Can't join in person? Register for the online portion to network with fellow farmers online and find original content for every segment of agriculture. No matter how you spend your time at Farm Journal Field Days, you're guaranteed a great time. There's a lot more to know about this week-long event, so visit farmjournalfielddays.com today.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beej, nice move going on in the soybean market. Got some demand behind this, don't we?
Yeah, we do, Chip. You know, we had daily sales to both China and unknown destinations this morning for soybeans. So that marks the fourth market day in a row, going back to late last week, that we've had daily soybean sales. So obviously, you know, we either got foreign buyers coming in here and wanting to snatch up some U.S. beans ahead of USDA's reports on Thursday, or we got down to a value level, or both. And yeah. You could probably argue that there's some of both of that involved. We also had a daily corn sale to Mexico this morning, so probably hedging their bets a little bit on that front. You know, that's just helping to limit seller interest a little bit, just a penny or two lower in the corn market so far this morning.
Yeah. Yeah. Did I see right that there was a sale to Mexico in there for a small amount of 2022-23 delivery corn?
Yes, correct. Yeah, that was split between new crop and then the red contracts or
right.
2 years out. So, yeah, they're booking it way ahead of time.
Yeah, a little bit of pressure on corn. Wheat's participating in the rally with soybeans. But take us over to the livestock trade. What's going on?
Well, just really in the hog market, quite the divide. We've got August hogs being supported by their discount to the cash index, and the deferred contracts continue to fall. So a huge spread there between the August and October contracts as that August gets set to expire at the end of the week. In the cattle market, we're trading to the upside in both live cattle contracts and some of the feeder cow contracts. Front end of the market is a little bit weaker.
Thank you, Brian. Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Glad that you are with us this morning. Boy, we've covered a lot of ground on the cattle market transparency issues and some of the confusing issues that exist around beef labeling. And we're going to jump right into one of those conversations right now. We've got Senator Mike Rounds from South Dakota on the line. Senator, thank you so much for making time for us.
Hey, I appreciate the opportunity to visit with you. This is a pretty important topic.
Oh, it certainly is. Now, the USA Beef Act, and this is something that is so critically important, and we might have a little different view on why it's important. I'm looking at it from a consumer point of view, Senator, and saying, well, now wait, this product of the USA, if it's going to say product of the USA, it probably had better be a product of the USA. From a cattle producer's point of view, they may have a different perspective on it, but the bottom line is, if it's going to say product of USA, it better be a product of the USA, right?
Absolutely. And in fact, this is bipartisan legislation. My partner on this legislation is a Democrat from New Jersey, Cory Booker. He sees the consumer side of this issue. And what we're trying to share is look, there's only 9 states where cattle outnumber people. South Dakota is one of them. But we need support from members of Congress from all of the other states. They've all got beef consumers in them. So the message that we're trying to share is, if it says that this is a product of the United States, then the major packers should not be able to bring in foreign beef that's boxed and then repackage it and send it to the grocery store with a product of the USA label on it. That's false advertising. Consumers should be irritated about it. And why in the world would producers want somebody else's meat to be advertised as their own meat? That's where this problem really rubs a lot of producers who are really proud of the quality of the product that we produce here in the United States.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Now, many of the producers that are in favor of USA Beef Act, in other words, making sure that if it says product of USA, it is an actual product of the United States and the beef was raised here in the U.S., they may look at this, Senator, and say, okay, if we can get this done, then let's keep going and get back to mandatory country of origin labeling. Has there been any discussion on that?
We've had lots of discussion on that. And part of the problem that we've had in the past is Congress can't do it alone. Congress can pass a law, but since this has to do with trade agreements, which are similar to treaties, you can't simply walk in and say arbitrarily, we've decided that mandatory country of origin labeling is going to be the law of the land, because the WTO has got a say in that. Because what we need to have happen is to have Congress get the executive branch of government to have their trade representatives include that in our trade agreements. And we haven't done that in the past. So Mexico and Canada have legal standing to come back and go after us and ask for damages. We got to fix that. And so what we've suggested is a sense of Congress, a sense of the Senate, directed to the executive branch that any more trade agreements with those countries will include language that allows for country of origin labeling on a mandatory basis. I agree. This isn't the end step, but let's get this part done while we can. And by the way, the only reason why you have a voluntary label that's not subject to WTO is because it's voluntary. But why in the world our U.S. Department of Agriculture, for more than a decade, as a matter of fact, since about 2003, has allowed this to go on is beyond me. And most certainly consumers should be just as angry as producers are.
Yeah. Yeah, boy, I agree with you on that. You mentioned the voluntary country of origin labeling. It feels like that's what you want the product of USA labeled to be, a labeling for voluntary country of origin.
That's correct, but it should not stop us from pursuing mandatory country of origin labeling. Okay. There's no reason why we can't pursue that and be successful, but we've got to do it the right way, which is to have our trade representatives include that in our trade agreements. So I'm all in favor. I'm totally in favor of mandatory country of origin labeling. I don't want to stop with this product of the USA, but I most certainly don't want to let the perfect get in the way of the good. And I just see no reason why the rules that the Department of Ag puts out should let foreign beef get this advantage and mislabel itself and mislead consumers, suggesting that this really is a product of the USA. That's wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. The way the product or the label is handled now, is used now, it's botched. You are exactly right. It is botched. It's wrong on many different levels, the way that it's being used.
Can I hit you on one more item there?
Yeah.
USDA is currently trying to do an end run on us, I think, also, because they want to, now that they know and we put a lot of pressure on them about this product of the USA on a voluntary label, now they're saying, well, you know what, we ought to just call it processed in the USA. And they've actually got a rule that they're proposing, and the deadline for commenting on it is this Friday. So producers, heads up, your Department of Ag wants to modify this so that packers can now just say, well, it's processed in the U.S. by repackaging it. That is an end run. It's designed to stop us from getting what we should have, which is a true voluntary product of the USA. And I just ask producers out there, if you got the time to do it, send a note to the USDA and say, shame on you. You're trying to work your way around this. And this ought to be a true voluntary product of the USA. Don't go changing one word in it, suggesting that these packers can just reprocess it and then be legal to sell it in that form.
And Senator, I'll bet I can tell you what the design on that label would be. It would say in very fine print, processed in, and very big print, USA. That's how they operate.
We think alike.
Yes, absolutely.
Time to take back our own Department of Ag.
I love it. Okay, good, good, good. I do want to ask you about an effort that you are working on, I believe, with Senators Tester and Grassley on the anti-competitive investigation into beef packing. What's the status on that?
Yeah, right now we've got a couple of items going on. First of all, we've sent a letter to the Department of Justice asking them to investigate whether or not there are anti-trade activities going on by the big packers. Let's find out for sure. And if our laws aren't strong enough to stop what's going on right now in the live cattle market, then we ought to be changing the laws. If they are strong enough, then let's go in and fix this thing, because the activities that are going on right now are not treating the market correct. A couple of different activities going on there. One of them is more transparent pricing. We want to make sure that a larger part of all that they buy is on the open market. There's a couple different programs out there. Senator Fisher's got one. Senator Grassley's got another. Both of which would move in the right direction. And along with that, though, we've got to get the Department of Justice to take a look. And then finally, we've also got legislation in place that would create a new office in the Department of Ag that would create basically an inspector general that would work with the Department of Justice, crossing through those silos from the Department of Ag to the Department of Justice, do the investigations, and then report to the Department of Justice where they find areas of antitrust activity.
Okay. You know, I think that this is a topic that is so important to cattle producers all over. I mean, they really are speaking with a unified voice on the transparency and the anti-competitiveness stance, aren't they?
Yes, they are, and it's a welcome relief, as we've shared with the different groups. Listen, if you guys, the different organizations, they all mean well, but if they can't get together because they agree on 80% of what the problems are, they ought to at least band together and fight for the 80% that we can agree on and agree to disagree on the other 20, but let's get our butts in gear. Let's start cooperating organization to organization. Set aside your differences and do a united front, because like I said earlier, there's only 9 states in the United States where livestock, cattle, outnumber people. And we can't do this without banding together and making our voices known. And if we give them 3 or 4 different approaches that we say have got to be done, a lot of the other members just throw up their hands and say, get your act together before you come see us.
Excellent. Excellent. Good stuff. Okay, one last thing that I want to touch here real quickly. I love the effort to give packers, smaller packers, the ability to sell across state lines. What's the status on that legislation?
Well, to be honest, it's up right now. Angus King, who is an independent out of Maine, he and I both agree small states should be able to sell across state lines. Right now, we think if you're following all of the safety standards as put out by the Department of Ag, and by the way, in order to be state licensed, you've got to be doing that, then you ought to be able to sell right across the state line. So in my state, down by Sioux Falls, we've got beef processors, small ones. They can sell all the way 400 miles away in Rapid City, but they can't sell right across just 15 miles away in Iowa or in Minnesota. We think just to be able to expand and to take care of those markets and to be competitive in that region and allow one more place where producers can get their beef processed, they should be able to allow these state-certified locations a chance to sell across state lines.
Great, great. Good stuff. Keep up the good work on this. It's very important work that you're doing, and we appreciate all the effort. Thank you.
You bet. Have a good day.
You bet. That is Senator Mike Rounds from South Dakota. When we come back, heading right back up to South Dakota for a conversation with Representative Dusty Johnson.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone. Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. Your pal, Davis Michelson, here behind the big green leafy microphone. Chip got a call from the Astronaut Academy. I know he's been waiting for that phone call. So I said, you know what, go ahead and take the call. Hopefully there are sidekicks in space. I mean, how cool would that be? Anyway, so he's dealing with that. He'll be back for this afternoon's show. Don't worry, everything's fine. In his absence, actually, you might recall from yesterday, we spoke with Representative Dusty Johnson of South Dakota. There was a bill that was just coming out, but the details were embargoed. That's just a fancy schmancy way of saying we can't talk about it yet. Well, we can talk about it now. So he came back. Congressman Johnson came back with some details, some thoughts on that, and we have that discussion for you now. Joe, let's go ahead and roll that.
Representative Dusty Johnson from South Dakota is with me. And Representative, we talked yesterday, but you're introducing a new piece of legislation today, the Ocean Shipping Reform Act of 2021. Tell me about it. What's the incentive for this?
Well, I would say that any marketplace really needs a certain orderly and fair nature to really work, right? And then what we have seen is that the foreign ocean shippers, I'm sorry, the foreign ocean carriers are not treating American ag products properly. They are refusing to put these goods into containers. We've seen a backup, particularly in the pork, although in some other parts of the industry as well. These guys are not playing by the rules, and I think it's incredibly unfortunate. We've figured out that the regulator, the Federal Maritime Commission, they don't have the power they need to make these carriers treat the shippers fairly. And so John Garamendi, he's a Democrat from California, he and I are working together in a bipartisan way to introduce this bill, and it's going to do a few things. It's going to increase transparency, it's going to give the FMC some additional authority, and it's going to make it clear that if you are an ocean carrier, you don't get to unreasonably refuse to carry American ag products across the ocean to Asia.
The expense that a lot of these exporters have experienced because of some of these shipping delays, Congressman, it's been unbelievable, some of the expense that they've incurred. This should help get rid of this. What is some of those expenses? It's a bipartisan bill. Do you feel like it's gaining traction?
It is absolutely gaining traction.
Okay, good.
This marketplace has changed a lot. It's been since 1996 that Congress has updated, you know, the part of the code that deals with this maritime commerce. And I just want to give you some sense of what's happened since then. Okay. So at that time, the top 10 ocean carriers controlled 12% of the marketplace. Well, now the top 10 control 80% of the marketplace. Okay. So we're getting kind of away from a free market and more toward an oligopoly. It means that these guys are not treating customers well. They're not particularly ag shippers. And so I think we are gaining some momentum. There will be a huge swath of state and local ag groups and other shippers who will be endorsing our legislation, because I just think they see that they're being treated poorly. They're being discriminated against. And I think if these foreign companies are going to use American ports to bring in Asian consumer goods, we need to make sure that they follow some basic rules of the road. And instead of hauling those containers back empty, let's fill them up with American grain and American pork and other good ag products.
Yeah. Yeah. Fantastic. I love that. I know this is really difficult to predict, but what's the timeline look like? And if the listeners want to voice their support for this, how do they do that?
Well, if they want to reach out to their member of Congress, their senator, and just say, hey, what's going on right now with container shipments is broken. Dusty Johnson's got a bill, support it. That's all that they would need to say.
Okay.
Just the container shipment, that universe is broken and that we've got a solution. And I don't, part of the issue is the only stuff that's moving, the only big important stuff that's moving right now is really stuff that's part of Speaker Pelosi's agenda and President Biden's agenda. And they're really focused on the $3.5 trillion reconciliation package. We're running out of days in 2021, legislative days, where we can deal with something like this. This is a crisis. We absolutely have detention and demurrage fees that are being charged to ag shippers that should not be. We got to get our arms around this deal. And so we need to build a little noise. We need to build a little volume. And we need to remind folks who maybe don't come from ag areas that, the whole world needs to eat, and Americans are not going to be in as good a situation to continue to have food stability if we put a lot of producers out of business because they can't get their products to export markets.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Good luck with the bill, sir.
Sounds good. Thanks much.
You bet. That is U.S. Representative Dusty Johnson from South Dakota.
Well, there you go. Nice little update there. That news just coming out right now. As I understand, the press release has just been made available widely. So we appreciate the congressman's willingness to share that information and to get it out there. A couple of big issues from the guys in South Dakota. The labeling issue is one that is vitally important. And I feel like Senator Rounds did a fantastic job of sort of fleshing that out for us, why it's important, what the specifics might look like. Are we, does that necessarily require revisiting cool, country of origin labeling and all that sort of stuff? Lots of good stuff in there. Appreciate both of those good fellows stopping by. Hey, there's a lot of irons in the fire right now for us, as you know. We've got the crop tour coming up next week, the following week, Farm Journal Field Days. Just a reminder here, Farm Journal and the National FFA Foundation are presenting the annual Farm On Benefit Concert. You can join us for some of country's music's biggest stars, raising money for FFA and its commitment to growing the next generation of leaders. The concert will air Monday, September 20th at 7 Central. Get your FFA-er involved. Just text a picture of them in their blue jacket with the words Farm On to 31313. That's Farm On to 31313, or by using the Farm On hashtag via social media. And make sure and join us for the Farm On Benefit Concert this September 20th. At 7 p.m. Well, that's the morning show. We've got Mike Mock on later this afternoon. Chip will be back. Mike's from Mike Mock Consulting. We'll hope you join us tomorrow morning. We've got Jerry Goodell, Midland Research, plus the Farmer Forum.